It is the Locked On Bengals podcast with your hosts Joe Goodberry and Jake Lisco. Find us on Twitter at Joe Goodberry and at Jake_NFL. Please like, subscribe, and share as we try to grow this community and pump out daily Bengals content just for you.
What up, Bengals fans, and welcome to another episode of the Locked On Bengals podcast. Today, journalists in Cincinnati were served mock turtle soup, which is Paul Danner's favorite day of the year, I think. We have the countdown to kickoff. We have a Tyler Boyd extension and our reactions there, too. We have AJ Green extension talks. And we have a little bit more kind of news trickling out from journalists talking to coaches, talking to Mike Brown. The one of very few days a year Mike Brown actually addresses the journalists. And you're going to go find the podcast on the Himalaya Podcast app, on the Google Podcast app, on iTunes, on Spotify, and other places on the internet. But without further ado, Joe, you read some quotes today. Any quick hit reactions? We're getting there. 4 days away.
For Tyler Boyd, I had my own personal experience with this.
I did too. Mine was different from yours. Not Tyler Boyd. Mine was with the AJ Green stuff, but I saw yours.
Yeah, mine was weird. So I'm like sitting there. It's break time. I had a shift overtime today, and I'm sitting there. I go, you know, I wonder when these extensions are going to happen. You just get that feeling sometimes. You ever get the feeling for Bengals news or football stuff? Well, I get it. And let me go look at the recent. I'll go back to 2010 or so and look at the recent extensions that happened in the summer around either before camp, after camp. And let me date them and see when they normally happen. And there was only one out of 10 that happened in July, in late July. And I think it was Carlos Dunlap, his second deal. And the rest were all either at the end of camp or at the beginning of camp, in August, or they were in September. So I'm compiling this. Once I see this, I say, okay, those will make a decent graphic. So I start putting it together, and takes me 10 minutes or so. I send out a tweet, hey, if you're expecting a Tyler Boyd or AJ Green extension, we're probably a couple weeks too early. Hit send, right?
Yeah, refresh my timeline. Twitter yet. I didn't actually read the tweets first.
Right, because I was creating this and figured send it right as soon as it's done. I refreshed my timeline. First one on there, Tyler Boyd extension 10 minutes ago. I'm like, okay. Yeah. That's perfect. Of course, that's what happens.
My experience was the AJ Green stuff afterwards. Lauren Fowler, who is The Athletic?
She is soccer, I believe.
But also is covering the Bengals today. She, I guess, misinterpreted a Mike Brown quote. This tweet is now deleted, and if you go look around Twitter, you'll see a bunch of people quote tweeting it, and it's deleted. And she issued a correction, but her initial interpretation of a Mike Brown quote was that it's not AJ's time yet to get extended. What Mike Brown, it turns out he meant, was it's not AJ's time to start falling off yet.
Right. So there must have been two questions there that he was giving an answer to one.
Yeah, she misinterpreted what he was answering. And so
the correction never goes as far as the first mistake, huh?
What's that?
The correction never goes as far as the first mistake.
Well, she deleted the tweet, but yes.
Well, sure.
People ran with it, right? But it's a real roller coaster because he says that, and I'm like, does this mean that today is not his day and it's going to come in a few weeks? Or does it mean they're not going to extend Green before a walk year?
Because that would make sense.
And then I read other quotes coming in to say, you know, Duke Tobin, we're not expecting AJ to fall off. He does everything you want in a wide receiver. Mike Brown, similar things. Like, he has all the traits that we want. And I'm like, well, this doesn't make any sense. Charlie, Always Sunny in Philadelphia, conspiracy board, .gif.jpg. Right. And then a couple minutes later, somebody sends me a tweet that he's next. Everyone starts tweeting, Paul Danner, Jeff Hobson, you name it. Lauren Fowler corrects her tweet. AJ Green is who we're concentrating on next. It's like, okay, now it all makes sense. Right. Mike Brown didn't say something stupid. Everyone's on the same page. We're good.
Right, because I had people saying, you know, it's time to go to bed, old man, and whatever else to Mike Brown that you could.
Yeah, right.
You know, you're too old. You shouldn't be talking.
And oh, people are ready to jump on Mike Brown.
And oh, yeah. The gun's already loaded.
Look like he said something that's a little, you know,
Yeah.
I think Mike Brown was very measured today. I mean, there was a few things he says, you're like, okay, Mike, come on.
Right.
When he's
Where are
talking
your
about
manners?
how, and Lance McAllister tweeted this difference, I think, how phenomenally different things are going now than under Marvin Lewis. Just like he's shocked at how differently these coaches are running the team.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. It's just like,
Right.
yeah, I mean, yeah, Mike.
Okay. That's
But
what you should have
besides that,
done.
you know, he's talking about how he wants his. We're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves because we're going to talk about some of this stuff. But he's talking
Yes.
about how, you know, he wants to win back the fans. He's going to feel good if he walks away from the game having gone out on a high note. He's starting to talk about walking away, which I found interesting.
So he wants to go out on a high note,
He
wants
wants
to win it
a.
all.
I mean, wouldn't you? It makes sense, right? I mean, he's 84, 85 years old.
Is there a, this is, we're kind of going off script here, but is there a high note he can go out on without winning, without being the owner of a team that wins the Super Bowl?
I mean, if you get to the Super Bowl again and you're Mike Brown, I feel like you feel pretty good about that. If you go out there and say it's 2 years from now, you know, you do your last draft. Say he does his last draft. He'll be 86 or 87 in 2 years. And he's gonna say he drafts Trevor Lawrence, and he says,
Right.
you know what, here you go.
I'm
Here,
out.
here's my gift, my parting gift to you, Cincinnati. Here's Trevor Lawrence. That could be, I mean, you're losing all your games,
Also,
but
they either sign an extension on the lease, right? Another 15 years on the stadium, and here's a practice bubble in Trevor Lawrence. I retire. I mean, you could go out on a high note there,
sure.
right?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Anyway, let's quickly hit our countdown to kickoff for today. We're 47 days away from opening day in Seattle, which is a 1.5 hour seaplane ride from where I live.
Oh, when you think of number 47, who do you think of?
No one?
It could be anyone in the league. Right. I can't think of anyone for the Bengals, but John Lynch is like, for
Oh, yeah.
me, number 47 completely.
I don't pay attention to numbers as much as you. We've talked about this a bunch, so there's nobody that really pops into my head.
Right. It's definitely not a linebacker. That's definitely not what I think about. And that's who wears it for the Bengals now. Number 47 out of Ohio State going into year two, Chris Wehrle.
Corey Lynch wore 47 for the Bengals in 2008. Marvin White wore 47 for the Bengals in 2010.
You remember Corey Lynch?
I do remember Corey
Appalachian
Lynch.
State. They beat Michigan. He had that kick field goal block
He
return.
had long hair.
Oh, I don't remember
Maybe he didn't have long hair.
that. Maybe he did. I don't know. Maybe he had it in Madden.
It doesn't look like he had long hair.
Just erase all that from your memory. He did not have long hair.
Maybe
Ethan
sometime.
Kilmer.
No,
Remember that
yeah.
safety?
Kilmer. Did he have long hair?
No, not at
No?
all.
Did the Bengals ever have a safety that had long hair?
No,
No.
not a white guy.
I don't know what I'm thinking about then.
Unless we need, we'll be corrected on this, I'm sure. Okay, so Chris
Somebody's
Wehrle,
going
what
to
do
be
you got?
mad that we didn't mention somebody in their history, but I'm looking back and going all the way back to 1968. The longest this number has been worn by any Bengal was for 2 seasons, and that's Charlie King, Greg Bright, and Steve Madlow.
Yeah, that's it. So 47 has no fame, no history to it for the Bengals.
I mean, somebody might come into our mentions and be like, how could you forget about the great David Frisch?
Right.
But.
If you made a cool play. Is that like our Chinadum and Duque? If we get to 41 and I'm like, oh, Chinadum. Are they going to be like in 20 years? What are you old guys talking about? That guy wasn't even good. I'm looking at his stats right now.
Are people bringing up people that weren't good? Most of the
No,
people that like people get
but
mad
the
at us
players you
about
just
are
named
good. Yeah.
are guys I have no idea who they are.
When we do get to 41, in addition to Chinnadom, there are a lot of good players in Bengals history that have wore that number. Two of them, Lorenzo Neal, who I
Oh,
think
yeah.
is probably the best fullback of all time.
Should probably be in the Hall of Fame.
I think so. And Solomon Wilcots.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So
Anyway,
Chinadum and Duque, not a top three guy. Or
today,
maybe.
we should get back on topic, I guess, and talk about Chris
Maybe.
Worley.
I got
Ohio
a great
State
quote
guy?
from Chris Wehrle, though, when we get there.
You have a great what?
Quote from him.
Oh, great.
I think we should start with it, actually. Let's lead with this quote from
Yes,
Chris
okay.
Wehrle
I'm
from Cam
excited.
Fish.
I'm not
All
ready
right.
for this.
Right. Quote, I was one of those guys from Cleveland that didn't watch the Browns. I'd go for Cincinnati because I knew the Browns sucked, end quote.
He's right. The Browns have always sucked for as long as they've existed since 1990, whatever.
Oh, because he's probably like born in 99 or math
he's
again.
He's 23, so yeah, he's definitely young. A 90s kid.
96, 95. Please don't do this live.
Don't worry. I won't edit this out later.
Oh, thank you.
He, like Joe said, is a Cleveland guy. He went to Glenville High School. I feel like I was a debater in high school. I feel like I debated against some Glenville kids. Or maybe I'm thinking of Glenn Brooks in Chicago. I'm thinking of Glenn Brooks in Chicago. I take it all back. He was an Ohio State guy. Ohio guy through and through. I wonder if he's left the state. I mean, obviously, he's left the state for work. But it was a practice squad player for the Bengals for games 1-14 last year, was promoted to the active roster for the final two games of the season and played 37 special team snaps.
On Chris Worley's first NFL tackle, that came on a special teams play, he chirped at Jabril Peppers after Michigan safety, running back, kick returner. So the rivalry never dies.
On Worley's first NFL tackle.
And he had some words for Jabril Peppers after. That's so this had been the Browns game week 16.
The Bengals.com 2018 highlights say that he recorded one special teams tackle all year and says it was against Pittsburgh.
Interesting. This is from
that's not right.
Right, this is from the 23rd of December 2018. That had to be the Browns game.
Played his best against Michigan. He had 11 tackles against Michigan in 2017.
Okay.
Team captain is the senior in 2017 for Ohio State. Pretty neat. So all the Ohio State fans must love Chris Worley.
Oh, I bet. And that's why, I mean, he was, some people liked him in the draft as a day three pick. That's why I said before, like, Deshaun Davis and them are all competing for the same spot, because I do think there's a chance Chris Worley makes the team. Now he's not the most athletic guy, but he was a captain. He was calling plays, if I remember correctly, that's already a draft season ago, but East-West Shrine game, he was the one calling the defensive huddle for the East team.
A little bit undersized, though, makes it
of course
maybe a little bit tough for him without the athleticism that you see the undersized guys in the NFL thrive with. And the Bengals have a couple of these now, undersized guys that didn't necessarily test the way you want to see an undersized guy test. And Chris Worley and Sterling Sheffield, both undrafted free agents.
Right.
We've talked about in the last couple of days. Similar mold for both players. And you just have to see if, I mean, Chris Worley came into the league a little bit young. He was 22. He's 23 now. So there's a chance for him, but more than likely you're looking at a practice squad player. Looking at his preseason grades for last preseason, he was actually pretty good for the most part, I'd say. In his longest game, he played 40 snaps in week 4. Wasn't great, but had, you know, at least average marks in coverage. He missed a couple tackles in preseason, which really brings down your PFF grades, but had pretty solid run defense marks and decent enough pass coverage considering his athletic limitations.
Yeah, and he was the third Ohio State rookie on the active roster at that point last year when he was activated behind Sam Hubbard and Billy Price.
Three Ohio State guys.
Yeah.
They must be in heaven.
Right. There's two NC State picks this year, so did the Bengals sign an NC State undrafted guy? Because that'd be the same path.
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Doesn't mean that they didn't. Yeah, you know what? PFF doesn't have Chris Worley making a tackle against Cleveland either. Maybe he was just talking trash after a play and he didn't make the tackle.
Right. Maybe he was in on a tackle and actually didn't get a tackle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But PFF is usually pretty good about weird. Yeah, but PFF is usually just tackles or tackles.
Right. You're in on it, you get a tackle.
Yeah. So was a special teamer, was pretty decent at special teams in his snaps for the Bengals last year. PFF grade of 70 for his special teams plays. So you know what? Chris Worley, you have a shot. You play special teams well. You're going into your second year. You've at least got a leg up, I'd say, on the undrafted rookies coming into this year.
Yeah, I would think that. It's a fresh start anyways for any of these guys on the back end of the – for the entire roster, but for the back end, I think when, you know, definitely, if you are an undrafted guy or a late round pick that maybe has someone drafted above you that's expected to make the roster, I think all that gets thrown out the window when a new staff comes in and you have a chance to go neck to neck, neck and neck, one on one with Malik Jefferson. Yeah, he was drafted in the third round when you were undrafted, but there's it's not crazy to see on other rosters that this could happen where if he, you know, plays well, he beats out that third round pick.
Yep. So that'll do it for our Chris Worley roundup. That's our countdown to kickoff on number 47. We are going to take a quick break and come back and talk about the Tyler Boyd extension. We don't have the details yet, so once we get the contract breakdown, we'll revisit it. But initial reactions after this.
And we are back, Locked On Bengals podcast. Joe and Jake here. Finally, we got news. First time in a long time, right? Maybe since... No, that's not fair. We had a Clint Bowling news 2 weeks, a week ago. But real, like, positive news. First time since probably the draft. Because the last two big news stories were Jonah Williams and Clint Bowling. So, positive, you know, Bengals make a move, sign a guy, re-sign a guy, extend somebody at the position where... They've got two guys to go, and we'll talk about AJ Green. But right now, with the 4-year, $43 million deal on the surface, you know, we don't have the details, as you said, for Tyler Boyd extension. That should bring him what? So that should be five total years, right? Because this is 4 years added onto this year.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. It's a 4-year extension, 4 years onto the end of the deal. The average annual payout of $10.75 million or whatever it works out to be is 20th in the NFL, right around that Sterling Shepard mark in New York, right
around. Yeah, but that's on 4 years.
What's that?
That's on 4 years, though.
So?
I'm saying you could probably take his, what was it, $1.2 million this year, plus, you know, plus the 43, and divide that by five, because really it's a five-year extension, that's $8.8 million a year.
Is that how people do it? Don't you just count the contract you already signed as...
Well, if they add the money to this year...
If they added the money to this year.
Right, and I imagine they would. They got money sitting around. They got cap space. Well, that's what I mean about the details. We'll have to see, but it could be a super cheap contract.
Yeah, that's a good point. Even if it's 4 years, then that's still a fine deal. Putting him at 10.
I was perfectly happy with that at $10, $11 million, yeah.
Tyrell Williams gets paid more than Tyler Boyd. Right.
Yeah. I think this is, when I look at it at first, I was like, great deal. Perfect. And for a guy that I have some reservations, and Boyd has blown my expectations away from the point he was drafted to now, but because of that breakout year last year was so good. But because it's 1 year, there are some concerns, right? That maybe last year was the best we'll ever see, which is good enough, but the inconsistencies could be what we saw from the first 2 years. Still in his future, and if that's the case, then I think if we're looking at an average of $8 to $9 million a year over the next 5 years, that's perfectly fine for somebody that's a slot receiver. But if it's at $11 million, I can still handle that. So I think the deal is good,
and that deal is just going to look better in 2 years when you look at what receivers are made. Like it's 20th right now, but next year it's going to be like 30th real quick.
Go back 3 years ago when Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones, I mean, they're half the fan base was saying those guys are too expensive. You can't give them $8 million a year. Here we are 3 years later, and we're like, yeah, $11 million for Boyd, that's probably comparable, and it makes sense, and it's right. I mean, looking back, had the Bengals give $8 million, or could have, I should say, because Marvin Jones didn't want their guaranteed money, if they could have gotten a deal done for $8 million a year, we'd look at that right now like, what a steal. How cheap is that for a number two receiver?
And Kevin Cole over at PFF, he's at Kevin Cole PFF on Twitter, does R&D. He's a data scientist for them. He, I think, does some work with their wins over replacement metric that PFF has tried to do for football players. They value Boyd over the next 2 years in the $13 to $17 million average per year range.
Yeah.
And so you look at that, and the Bengals got him for $10.75 over 4 years. And like Joe said, if you count the fifth year, this year, it gets cheaper. That looks like a really good surplus deal for the Bengals. He does mention that it's difficult to trust the third-year breakout. It's hard to know what's real there. I mean, you think about guys...
That's why you do it early, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to hopefully you win on that side of the deal. The Bengals have won with Carlos Dunlap and Andrew Whitworth. Remember how many times they extended those guys early?
Yep. I was just going to say... you think about who's the guy in Jacksonville who was really good the 1 year he had injury issues?
At what
Robinson?
position?
Which
Allen
receiver?
Robinson, yeah.
Allen Robinson. He had that great year,
Yeah,
and
great
has
third year.
Kind of disappeared.
Right.
He had
great
some injury
third
issues
year,
that he dealt with.
Injured fourth year. Had they extended him after his third year, they'd be paying him $12 million a year, which right now it wouldn't be so bad because I think he's making like 15 from the Bears. But point being is they probably would have lost a little bit on that deal because he hasn't been as good, hasn't recovered, and their offense isn't designed to throw to receivers like that anyway. So,
so that's
yes.
The risk is all I'm
right.
trying to highlight. The comparables to Tyler Boyd that Kevin pointed out, Allen Hurns, Steve Johnson, Randall Cobb, and Kendall Wright. So you hope he's more on maybe like the Stevie Johnson, Randall Cobb end of the production spectrum there?
Yeah. Yeah, Randall Cobb, that'd be fine.
Yeah. I think that he has a possibility to be better too.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, and you look at last year, and Boyd was on pace for over 90 receptions, 1,200 yards, before Andy Dalton got hurt. And we saw when Dalton Green got hurt, Boyd's number slipped. Of course he did, right? You're losing the guy who's going to demand all the coverage and the starting quarterback of the team. So even with that, his metrics and his like deep analytics say he was overwhelmingly the best slot receiver. And I don't mean a guy that plays on the outside that also goes into the slot. I mean a guy that's playing like 80% of his snaps from the slot like Tyler Boyd was. He was clearly the best guy in the league last year. And if that's – even if that's a sliver of what he is over the next 4 or 5 years of this deal, that's a good player.
And he was incredibly clutch on third downs. As of November 28th last year, he was PFF's number third graded receiver on third downs behind just Julio Jones and Odell Beckham. Ahead of
That's
Corey
nice.
Davis and Adam Thielen, who are also very good on third downs. I saw something from PFF today as well that talked about the Boyd-Dalton connection being very strong.
Yeah,
Dalton threw like a very high clip of accurate passes to Tyler Boyd, who obviously converted them to a lot of production.
I wrote an article on that about Dalton off script and getting out of the pocket. It seemed like he constantly was looking and connecting with Boyd. And when you watch him, especially on the All-22, Boyd just knew how to find the open space and work with Dalton in the scramble drill. And I think the two of them being on the same page and playing as well as they did together last year to start the year was definitely a big contributor to why we felt the way we did about Dalton, and that he was making plays off script at a clip that we haven't seen before.
You know what's funny to me now that I'm looking at the PFF grades in a little bit more depth? Everyone's talking about how Juju Smith-Schuster is now better than A.J. Green.
Right.
You got to get better than Tyler Boyd first. Both Tyler Boyd and A.J. Green, number 11 and number 12 in PFF's receiving grades from 2018, were well clear of Juju Smith-Schuster's 18th overall grade. I don't know. I think you talk about Tyler Boyd, the 11th graded receiver for PFF, playing almost, not exclusively, but a majority of his snaps out of the slot.
Yeah, his best snaps.
You got to be thrilled. You got to be thrilled with this deal for the Bengals. It's a great piece of news for them that's been something that's, you know, they've needed. It's been a pretty bleak couple months.
Right. I've recently watched the Falcons game. You know, the Bengals come back on that last drive. And Tyler Boyd makes two clutch catches on fourth down with, I would believe it's Desmond Trufant covering him. And he just undresses him twice in man coverage and to make clutch fourth down catches. And you just go, yep, that's okay. You know, you feel real good about him in those situations. And I think they really lacked having that guy. And because even Sanu was, I felt comfortable with him in the slot, but he didn't win as many one-on-one opportunities as Boyd does, and he dealt with that 1 year of the dropsies where you kind of lost a little bit of confidence in him in those situations, and he hasn't had that problem since that year. But still, that year had an effect for the next year or so. We were like, you know, he's got a little case of the hands sometimes, and we just don't feel the same way about Boyd. We feel pretty confident right now.
I agree. Very happy to hear that this deal got done. Looking forward to the A.J. Green announcement that we're going to get in like a month.
Yeah.
Roughly.
End of September. I mean, end of August, early September.
That'll be fun.
After the Julio deal. You know what really was interesting here
is
that
there's a few receivers, I think. There's Julio, there's Mike Thomas, there's...
Sure, but I don't think you can compare to Mike Thomas, right, because of the age difference. I think the Julio deal is the big one.
I don't remember who it was, but I saw somebody tweeted today something about all these guys, all these receivers. There's three of them out there right now, in addition to Julio and Mike Thomas, that are waiting to sign new deals. And they're kind of waiting to go one after the other after the other, because they're all going to try to one-up the previous guy.
That's how it happened last time. It was Dez, Julio, Demaryius Thomas, and A.J. Green. But you remember when we did this, we talked about this about a month ago, and Tyler Boyd is very candid about wanting to match what Sterling Shepard got. Same draft, similar type players. They're slot guys in an offense that was struggling. Production has been pretty similar. And he flat out said that I'd like to get a similar deal. And he did, basically. That makes it so much easier when the outline is there for you and a very strong comparable is sitting there from the same draft class. And both sides can agree on that value, and especially because I think the Bengals got a good deal here. So, of course, they offered him that. And I think we said that when we talked about this originally. Give him that deal right now. We're all happy about it.
Totally.
So, you know, depending on what happens with Julio, that leads directly in the green, in my opinion. Same draft class, similar age, third contract with the same team, high productive guys. Probably both could make the Hall of Fame. So if Julio breaks the bank, Green's going to want to break the bank. If Julio gets maybe a little bit less, but a strong deal, then I think maybe Green comes down to earth a little bit and would take something similar.
It's just, it's a little bit hard for me to see AJ Green and Julio Jones both getting a contract bigger than Odell Beckham's at this point in their career. And
oh,
I'm not saying
they
it's not going to happen, because I think it will happen, at least for Julio. People are talking about, you know, $19, $20 million, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
But paying those guys who are 30 more than Odell Beckham over 5 years, from 26 to 31 or 25 to 30 or whatever his contract is, at $18 million a year, that doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
But that's not the way the NFL works.
NFL doesn't make sense a lot of times with contracts.
Just for the record, Tyler Boyd's current average annual is just behind Tyrell Williams, like I mentioned, by $250,000 or so. Just behind Keenan Allen, behind Sammy Watkins. I'd rather have Boyd than Watkins at this point in their careers. Behind Alshon
Jeffery.
Nice
deal on Keenan Allen, huh?
What's that? Yeah.
Nice deal for Keenan Allen for the Chargers.
That's a great deal for Keenan Allen. And he's a free agent after 2021. So that's 2 years ago, which gives you an idea about how inflation is happening. Because you scroll down just a little bit, you look at Marvin Jones's deal that was signed in 2016, $8 million a year. And that's a number we said the Bengals won't touch that.
Steal. Right. But the time we said they wouldn't.
Inflation adjusted.
And also guaranteed money, as we've talked about. If we find out Boyd got $14 million guaranteed, we're going to say, oh, okay, it's not the $26 million that Marvin Jones got.
This says $13 million guaranteed for Marvin Jones at signing, but practical guarantee is $20 million. So I see what you're saying.
Okay.
Yeah. So we don't know yet on Tyler Boyd, but we think the deal is very, very good for wide receivers that become a free agent in 2024, which he now does. His deal is very cheap.
Yeah.
So, you know,
in an offseason where they've had some bad deals, this is a slam dunk good deal and a good risk to take, in my opinion.
Is that it? Have we exhausted praise for the Tyler Boyd deal here? We're happy for everybody. The one thing I'll mention, there's an article over on Bengals.com right now that talks about the fact that Tyler Boyd's been in close contact with A.J. Green throughout this process. They're apparently close buddies. The first person that – one of the first people that Boyd messaged, he text messaged about the deal, was he sent A.J. Green a text. And he mentions that A.J. is getting his contract fixed up as well. So another reason to think that extension is coming. Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably just waiting for chips to fall. The Bengals aren't the aggressive ones usually, so.
But they got it done.
They got it done. Great.
Great. We'll come back after a last quick break here and recap some of the other notes coming out of Mock Turtle Soup Day at Paul Brown Stadium. Stick around.
And we're back for segment three. Jake, I need you to answer a question for me first before you go on, because you've said it twice now in this podcast. What is Mock Turtle Soup?
I don't know.
Is it like, okay, so turtle soup is a thing, I'm assuming, and this is mock turtle soup, so it's not actually turtle soup?
Mock turtle soup is an English soup created in the mid-18th century as a cheaper imitation of green turtle soup. It often uses brain and organ meat, such as calf's head or calf foot, to duplicate the texture and flavor of the original's turtle meat. Doesn't sound good to me.
Right, that's... This is Paul Denner's favorite day?
I don't know. I think I don't know if he likes the soup, but it's they've done it for like 35 years. It's a weird thing the Bengals do.
So they like it because it's weird at this point. Like, why do you still feed this?
I think it's got to be because it's weird.
Like, you realize nobody actually eats this stuff, right?
Maybe they don't make it with organs anymore.
And use sausage?
Anything else? I don't know.
What can imitate organs? So we're already imitating turtle with organs. So now how do we imitate turtle organs?
I don't think... I think move off this. I don't know. I don't know the answer. I'm looking at a recipe right now that Google came up with, and it doesn't use organ meat. It uses sirloin, ground sirloin. Oh,
great. Let's
do it.
That
sounds nice. Then it's just like a beef soup with
amazing
some vegetables in it.
Right. And it's green.
It also uses hard-boiled eggs in the soup, which is a little weird. But it would
That's
be
weird.
Okay. It'd be fine.
Oh, I like hard-boiled eggs in anything. Pasta sauce? Oh, man.
In pasta sauce?
Yes. Yeah. Do you think some noodles can be made out of egg instead
and
of...
you've never eaten Skyline?
I never have.
Oh, man. We gotta book our trip to
eggs.
Cincinnati.
Well, we might. I just got a cool email that I'm going to share with you after this.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Very excited.
I know.
All right. Let's finish this podcast. I want to know what exciting news Joe has for me.
Not news, just stuff to share. Maybe news. Potential news?
I mean, it's not like news for the people. It's news for me.
Right. For us.
Yes.
For fun. Yes.
So,
okay.
A couple notes here. First off, there's some discussion about the offensive line spots and Clint Bowling saying, and Brian Callahan, sorry, not Clint Bowling, Duke Tobin saying because Clint Bowling had to retire because Jonah Williams got hurt, they probably need to bring in a third tackle.
Right.
They definitely need to bring somebody else in, as we've talked about, and this is now something the club is acknowledging to some degree. Brian Callahan is quoted as saying, we still need tackles. We need tackles for depth. We need tackles to compete. So that will be addressed. He also talks about moving guys around, and this is something that I think has been very popular on Bengals Twitter, and that's the idea of moving Billy Price to guard and letting Trey Hopkins take snaps to center. And it sounds like that is something they plan to do, to get these guys' positional versatility going, because you never know what kind of situation might come up when you only have 46 guys available to you on a Sunday.
Yeah, especially when you don't have any backup tackles. You kind of have to, that's why I said before, like, let's say Westerman starts at left guard, Billy Price at center, John Miller at right guard, and Cordy Glenn gets hurt, because he does, and they kick out right now Trey Hopkins to left tackle. Well, the next guy, the next guard off the bench while Redmond is suspended, I mean, is that John Jerry? What if John Jerry isn't on the roster, right? Maybe that's Billy Price over to guard, and then Michael Jordan goes to center, or Hopkins is at center, or whatever, scenario you can come up with. But there are scenarios where I could see Billy Price being needed at guard, or maybe even be the best guard or the best combination of five on the team with him being at left guard.
Just
or
because
right.
You need to find a way to get Hopkins onto the field at that point, or whoever it is.
The tackles may be bad. You better make sure the interior three are your best three possible.
Well, I mean, given where we are right now, yeah.
I mean, that's the hope. I mean,
that's all they can do at this point. Unless they go out and trade for Trent Williams. But even if they trade for Trent Williams, he can't play this year anyway, perhaps. That's why he wants out of Washington. Speaking of Washington, I saw you had some mentions today about a certain Washington linebacker that was released.
Yeah, he's also on my shadow mock team. Most of my linebacker got released here. Mason Foster of the Redskins, who for the first time last year played 1,000 snaps for them. First time really playing like 99% of the snaps. Normally he's dealt with injuries, and he's never been a nickel guy, so it was surprising to see him in that role. But he was released, and which is also surprising because they lost Reuben Foster for the year. Remember, they took a chance on him last year. But
they let Zach Brown walk, right?
Yes, yeah. And
so they went from having three guys to having, like, their linebackers right now are Bengals.
Did they sign anyone in free agency?
I vaguely recall seeing a tweet today that said their linebackers look bad.
They didn't get C.J. Mosley, right? That was the Jets?
Oh, maybe? Maybe they? No. No, they're talking about... They're talking about, what's his name, Mason, Foster?
Foster? Yeah.
They're talking about him going to Baltimore, perhaps.
Yeah.
To but I don't think CJ Mosley. Where did he go? New York?
Jets. Got to be a Jets then. Yeah. All right. So, anyways, point being, people were asking, well, would the Bengals be interested in Foster? And I thought, as a backup inside linebacker, I don't think he moves the needle at all. If anything, he's a lot like Preston Brown. So, no, I don't think that's a scenario or a situation. In my mind, I don't want Foster. If we get to that point where Preston Brown's hurt again and you're trying out Ruben or Mason Foster, I would much rather have Malik Jefferson or Jordan Evans or Jermaine Pratt running around out there.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I guess it kind of depends on how good they are, though.
Sure, if they're terrible, then yes.
Well, but if they're 9-2, I would rather have Mason Foster than Malik Jefferson.
Oh, I mean, if the players are terrible.
Yeah.
If the team's good and those guys just are trash, then yeah, let me get Mason Foster in here.
Right. Okay. We good.
We're on the same page.
Yeah. The interesting note there that started this conversation was the conversation that Brian Callahan is having is around Christian Westerman and Trey Hopkins. He's not talking about John Jerry. He's not talking about Alex Redmond. He's not talking about, well, I guess he's acknowledging that the tackle depth isn't there. So Brian Callahan, again, is saying all the things that I want to see Brian Callahan say.
Yeah.
Consistently, since he's come to the Bengals, I've loved pretty much everything that's come out of Brian Callahan's mouth.
And that's a rarity for anything Bengals, especially coach-related.
Yeah.
Mike Zimmer was the last one, really?
I never questioned Mike Zimmer, yeah.
Right. Whatever he said, I was like, yep, where's the brick wall? I'll run through it.
Yeah.
That direction.
Yep. And I'm speculating here, and I'm really speculating here, but a little part of me wonders if Brian Callahan doesn't necessarily see eye-to-eye with Jim Turner on who he wants on the offensive line based on the film that they've both watched. Mm-hmm. Joe made a really good point before we started recording that position coaches, you know, they might have their types of guys, right? They're working with the units. They might, Jim Turner likes these big guys, right? But maybe Brian Callahan's out there looking at the results instead and says, you know what? I would rather have the guy that's been productive and has been able to execute the plays, the kinds of plays that we want to call, which is going to be a lot of outside zone stuff, might require some athleticism. Maybe big isn't what Brian Callahan wants. So maybe there's a bit of a divide there in terms of who they would prefer archetypally. I'm not saying that there's a schism or anything. I'm just saying that maybe there's maybe they have different types.
Yeah, then that's all it could be. And if you ask the personnel guy, if you ask Duke Tobin, he may hope for the upside guy. He may say, well, I think Westerman can be this. Mm-hmm. I think he can do this. I think this is his upside. I think he's a future starting left guard. I think he's maybe even a Pro Bowler. So they would have all different, you know, vantage points and expectations and wants for that position. So, that's how teams are crafted and made.
Yeah. So I'm not trying to start anything there. I know a lot of you think that we talk too much about Jim Turner and Bobby Hart. That is not my intent there. It is just something I've noticed is that you hear Jeff Hobson talking a lot about John Jerry. And I feel like I've seen quotes from Jim Turner talking a lot about John Jerry. Brian Callahan's talking about different players. Could be totally coincidental. Could be making a mountain out of a molehill.
No, I don't think you are. I think, you know, you got to read between the lines sometimes with the Bengals.com stuff. And if you do, you can be led on the right path.
I have read between the lines on the LeBeau stuff, and time will still tell if I have any idea what I'm talking about with that.
Well, I mean, it's true. They did hire those type of guys.
They hired a bunch of LeBeau coaches.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that affects the defense.
There are a bunch of other Mike Brown quotes over on Bengals.com today, one of which that I think we all agree with is that the 18-game schedule is stupid. Mike Brown wants to keep the schedule as 16 games. He said, and quote, I don't think we want to play Boston unless Brady isn't playing. Said Brown, unable to keep a straight face. Everyone knows the discussion on this. It isn't the way football has been played.
That's a terrible reason, though.
I mean,
I'm not for 18 games, but his reasoning isn't great.
Who knows if that's the only reasoning? That's the soundbite that we got.
I understand that, but this is his one time to talk the whole year almost. And to say that that's not the way it's been done, that's the worst reason to not change anything.
That's true.
Because we've always done it this way?
That's true. Okay. If that's the part you're focused on, then sure.
You know what I mean? If you would have said injuries, I would have been like, wow, look at him looking out for his players. Or expanded roster. Or the confusion of only playing a guy for 16 out of 18. Or do we get an extra bye week? Logistics, how do we figure this out? Are we eliminating preseason games? Had he have had more questions?
Nobody followed up with him either. At least as far as we know, we weren't there. But he does say everyone knows the discussion on it. So maybe he's just acknowledging there's a lot of dialogue.
Right. He knows all that. Yeah. Right. You're right. That's fair.
I'm not the one that's going to defend Mike Brown. I'm not going to white knight for Mike Brown, but let's try to keep a level head or whatever.
You're right. You're fine. I'm in the wrong here. I'm an idiot.
That really swung back the other way. You know what, Joe? I've had enough of this podcast. Let's tell me some secrets off air. You got anything else you want to add that you heard today that you found interesting?
No, nothing. I'm going to go read everything because, most of my interaction and information digesting was on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Not enough time in the day. That'll do it for us today. Bengals fans, we'll be back tomorrow with our last episode before training camp. We're taking Thursday, Friday off, and then we'll be back on Saturday with a bonus episode. Joe?
That's right. I'm just giving you a thumbs up because you're on it.
Nailing it. We'll be back Saturday with a bonus episode for the first day of training camp taking place in Dayton. And then we're on Sunday going ahead our regular schedule next week. Do we want to do a mailbag tomorrow, Joe?
Yes.
Send us your questions tomorrow. We'll get a tweet out there as well. Until next time, Bengals fans, have a good one.